2015 minutes. You have received them through email. Is there any questions or concerns about those minutes? Okay, hearing none, they'll stand approved. The next item is the performance reports of the pension and OPEB funds, and at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Schiff.
Okay, well, good morning, everyone. It's nice when you only have a 20-minute drive to your meeting instead of my usual 2 to 3 to... Last week, as I said, I went from Sunday night, I drove from Westchester to Altoona, spent the night in Altoona, then drove from there to Clearfield, which is another 45 minutes northwest of Altoona. If you know where Altoona is, it's about 45 minutes west of State College. And then from there, after that meeting was over, I drove to Newcastle, Pennsylvania, which is like about 10 minutes from the Ohio border, about an hour north of Pittsburgh, and then had that meeting on Tuesday morning, then drove all the way back to Westchester. So it's, for so many reasons, I like Sussex County. So there is a lot on the docket for today. So I'm going to go through relatively quickly the performance report, not to give it short shrift, but we've got to talk about the investment policy statement, we've got to talk about the manager search. If I'm moving a little too quickly or you have questions on the performance report, stop and ask questions, but I want to be mindful of your time, okay? So if you just go to tab one, just tee up what happened in the market, and this now goes to third quarter, because what happened in the third quarter, just about was all reversed positively in the fourth quarter. But if you look at page one, tab of tab one, see in the upper right-hand side, and you see the rectangles, the blue, which is the actual measured, and the lighter blue, which is the projected. But I'd pay more attention to the gold, which is the year-over-year growth of that, because you can have a lot of vacillation from quarter to quarter, just from measuring components of the GDP. And you can see, and this is a story we've been talking about the last 3 or 4 years, it's been reasonably steady growth, not robust, but reasonably steady in this 1.5% to 3% real growth, meaning inflation-adjusted growth. But there was some pullback in third quarter, both internationally and domestically, and that you'll see how that rippled through to the equity markets in third quarter. If you go to the graph on below that, the 10-year break-even, and the market sort of measures what inflation expectations are. And historically, and I'm talking about historically, more like a 30-year, 50-year, 80-year time frame, inflation has averaged more around 3%. You can look at different periods of times, from 60s to 2000, it was more like 4%. But over real long periods of time, it's been about 3%. But the last 20 years, it's averaged about 2%. Okay? And this blue line you see is not actual inflation, but it's what the market is projecting to be the next 10 years. And what you see is in September and actually in August, a downward expectation of inflation. Actually, the market's now saying they expect inflation over the next 10 years to be average about 1.5%. It's quite a bit below a three-year average, about obviously half of that. And why the inflation expectations have gone down is because the world economy slowed up, primarily driven by China. China has had a tremendous amount of pullback, and there's actually a lot of concern that even the numbers that they were showing before might have well been inflated numbers. Now, pullback to them doesn't mean they're in recession. It just means the rate of growth has slowed up. And to some degree, that's expected because you don't continue to grow and grow at 7 to 10% a year. Eventually, a developing economy will eventually then catch up to the developed world economies, and so the rate of growth has to be slower. But we think there's other dynamics going on, of the overall economy slowing up, not just because they're getting closer and closer in size to us. If you look at the graph on page two, upper right-hand side, that's the year-over-year world trade volume. It's really a measure of the overall world trade, And the gold dotted line is the historic average, over the last 20 years. And year-over-year world trade has grown at about 5%. But the last 2 years, it's been significantly below that. And actually, this past, you can see that trend line is down there also, which, again, you'll see this ripple through into your portfolio, not just overall market returns, and then also your own. And then the graph at the bottom of page two is the daily change in the U.S. dollar versus the Chinese yuan, I think is how it's pronounced, exchange rate. If somebody has a better pronunciation of that, please let me know. But what you see is a real spike up, and that was in August. And China had purposely taken action to devalue their currency. And the reason why they went to devalue their currency is because they are still primarily an exporting economy. And if they can devalue their currency, that means the price of their goods would be less expensive, make them more attractive for outsiders to buy. You know, we'll see what it actually does for them. But now if you go on to page three, you can see last quarter and for the last several years, all the bars were to the right of zero, at least in the equity markets. Well, for the year and for the quarter, they're all to the left, meaning negative returns. Now, again, this is through September, because then I'll bring you up to date in October. U.S. equities were down 7.2%. That's the gray bar. And year-to-date, down 5.4%. International equities down 10.2%. And emerging markets, and international means all non-U.S. markets that are not emerging markets, the so-called developed non-U.S. markets, and emerging equity market equities down almost 18%. That's pretty typical of what you'll see. When the equity markets are down, usually the U.S. will do the best. They'll be the least negative. And emerging markets will typically be the ones most negative. Okay, and you absolutely see that. U.S. bonds actually were slightly positive, up 1.2% versus 1.1%. It's a flight to quality. You know, and that happens. We've seen that again and again and again. And for those of us who have a fair amount of this, what was dark hair that has sort of changed some color over the years, I've seen that for many years of there usually is a flight to quality in those situations. Even in 2008, when the equity markets were down so precipitously, actually U.S. high-quality bonds did well. Okay, international bonds, negative for the year, positive for the quarter, and emerging market bonds, as one might expect, strongly negative. Inflation-sensitive investments, which, to be clear, you do not have an explicit allocation to these other areas. There are a number of plans out there that have specific allocations to commodities, specific allocations to REITs, specific allocations to TIPS. Do you have a little bit of indirectly in there? Sure, if you own, you know, Exxon in your S&P 500 fund, you're going to have exposure to the energy market. But it's not a direct invested through commodities. And commodities have done extremely poorly. It's one of the reasons, well, not just because this past quarter, why we don't advise clients to go into commodities is typically when the equity markets and the economies, when economies start going down, the equity markets go down and the commodities go down even harder. So it doesn't give you a good diversification, you know, if what you're trying to do is hedge, you know, your what's known as your equity beta. And then U.S. REITs, for multiple reasons, you don't have investments in there. But one of the driving points, as mentioned before, and so I think somebody mentioned at the last meeting also, is because so much of your budget is predicated upon the real estate market. You don't want to double down. It's not a direct 100% correlation, but it is having a lot in the same area that is a big driver of your budget. Okay. And then the last thing on the markets is on the U.S. equity markets. We saw last quarter what we typically see, that in the down markets, large cap stocks, although down 6.3%, you can see that at the first line. Small cap stocks were down almost 12%, down 11.9%, and mid cap down 8%. That's, you know, doesn't always happen that way. From 2000, 2002, it was actually the other way around. Large cap were the underperformers because they had done so well in the 90s. But most of the time, this is what you see. So you see a very typical pattern there. This is why we believe, and you've embraced the idea of, you don't try to guess which market. You have some exposure to large cap, mid cap, and small cap. You have exposure to growth and value stocks. You have exposure to international and U.S. stocks. And you have a nice distribution between your fixed income, which protects you in the down markets but doesn't give you much in the up markets, and then your allocation to equities. So any questions about the economic and the financial markets? Okay. Go on to the next tab. So the market value, and this is for the pension, the market value as of the end of September was $70.7 million. I do not have an update on the pension because we don't get the interim information from the state, but I do have it on the OPEB fund, so we'll give you some, at least. you can draw, I'll say, some reasonable same conclusions with what pension did in October. Third quarter, it's a gain, but it was down $3.5 million. And for the year, the 1 year, which would be October 1st to September 30th, a loss of $296,000. Your quarterly performance was in line with the policy index. Underperformance by DuPont, I do not worry that they had one quarter that they underperformed, is a reference in the last meeting, and I'll show you the longer-term numbers have been very good for you, okay? And it was offset by the state. The state had a very, you know, relatively a good quarter. Okay, relatively means lower, you know, lesser negatives, okay? Then looking ahead, the investment policy statement changes that we talked about last quarter, and you asked us to put a summary together and bring back information for this meeting, which we'll get to next. And then the discussion that we started at the last meeting about increasing your international allocation, adding a new international or global manager to get that access. Because right now, you are targeted at 12% international. You have about 60% of your money in the state fund. The state targets for 20% international. 20% of 60% would be 12%. You do not have, of your other 40%, you do not have any of that in international. So that's why we are charged to come back with some options in that area. And then you are going to think about whether you want to increase that target from to 14% or 16%. Okay? Just a couple other things. I'll show you a couple manager returns and then take questions and move on to the OPEB fund. If you go to page 11, you can see, and actually we have started changing the format a little bit. There was, you know, the questionnaire we handed out, we got a lot of really good feedback from yourselves and from others. Number one thing they said is make the report shorter. So we got very nice scores. We appreciate that from everybody. But in the comment areas, see what you can do about making the report shorter. So we've been working on that. You can see third quarter, as I mentioned, an investment loss of $3.5 million. Over the past 3 years, you had an investment gain of $14.6 million. And that turns out to be an 8.1% return. Okay. Page 12 just shows the cash flows. The only cash flow for the quarter was a very small amount of money taken out of the operating account. Okay. No, I don't know what $390 was for, but it was for something. And then if you go to page 13, you'll see fairly consistent, and this is what we like to see, very consistent asset allocation. You don't see these wild gyrations where you're taking some tactical bets or, you know, the state's percentage of the fund has stayed fairly consistent. Your domestic equity allocations, as well as your domestic fixed income, very consistent over time, which I think makes it much more predictable, which is what you want. On page 14, you see your returns and your rankings. The rankings is among a peer group of other public funds. It's about 250 public funds throughout the U.S. These funds range in size from roughly the small size, $5 million, but quite a few of them in the billion-dollar size. So, you're competing against even the biggest ones, and you'll see your ranking for the quarter was in the top, you can read the way the read is, top 36%, so the top half, top 30% year-to-date, the 1 year top 36%, 3 years top 19%, 5 years top 25%. That, quite frankly, I think is a very nice place to be. I actually like to see it, our clients in roughly around that 20th to 30th percentile. You might say, well, why not the top 5 to 10%? Because if you're in the very top, most likely you're either taking a very large, well, you are taking a large bet, either very, very conservative or very aggressive, and you, by design and by intent, is to be sort of much more down the middle of the road. You know, you actually lean a little to the conservative side. So to have the kind of returns that you've had over the last 5 years where you are more conservative than the average plan and we're actually paid to be more aggressive has been, you know, obviously beneficial to you. 5 years, you've averaged 8.4%. That is a gross return. That's that net of your fees. Your fees are roughly 50 basis points. You are, I will tell you, your overall fees are one of the more expensive ones that I see out there, but that's because the state plan is more expensive because they do have private equity. They have hedge funds in there. So those are going to be more expensive. But they have shown that the performance that they've provided you has more than offset those fees. And If you look at it year by year, you'll see some years the state's ahead of the rest of your pool, and other years you're ahead of the rest of the, having that combination has worked very well for you. Okay. Let me just touch on a couple of the managers on page 17, and we can move on to the OPEB fund. So on page 17, again, you see restated the performance of the fund, the total fund composite, as it's called, the policy index, the ranking of each of those, and then DuPont, they were at 7.4% versus the S&P, that was down 6.4. They were still roughly around average to 57th percentile. We did talk with them. It wasn't any one particular thing that caused some underperformance. It's not a huge underperformance, and I want to stress that. It's just a couple of their stock selections didn't work quite as well as they would have liked them to have done. Year to date, they're also, therefore, 80 basis points below their benchmark. In the 1 year, they're 120 basis points below their benchmark. 3 years and 5 years, they're ahead. And then since inception, they're about 30 basis points ahead. Okay. Vanguard Extended Market, you added that in October 14th. That was just to get exposure to the small cap space. When we look at your overall structure and you look at what the state had, and then you had DuPont had, you wanted to get a little bit more exposure in the mid and small cap areas. And so yeah, the Vanguard Extended Market Index, very inexpensive, and it's designed to do what it's supposed to do, meaning it's the index fund. In fact, it should not outperform, nor should it underperform. Okay. The Mid-Cap Value Index, you added that December of last year, and they, too, do what they're expected to do, and their cost is very low. Off the top of my head, I think it's about 8 basis points for the Mid-Cap Value Fund. Extended markets, somewhere between 8 to 10. And Wilmington Trust Bonds, very consistent, not any outperformance, but you're... And it'd be nice, quite frankly, to have a little bit of outperformance to cover the fee part of it. Their fees are very attractive, that 20 basis points, which is a very low fee for a fixed income manager. But what you're looking for them truly is to hit the singles, and that's what they've done for you. And that is, although not specifically a laddered bond approach, it is like a laddered bond approach, that they do find out what your cash flow needs are. They try to have a certain amount come due each year in case you need to call on that for cash needs. You haven't had to, but as benefit payments go up, as they will, because as you have more and more retirees, and if the ARC can continue to go down, then you'll start running into a negative cash flow situation, which you've had a little bit of from time to time. And I'm fine with their performance. As I mentioned before, the state has done a nice job for you, and they actually outperformed this quarter at 4.4 versus 5. Again, those are gross, so with their fees being about 70 basis points, now that's 70 per year, not per quarter, you know, the returns are still very good. They're just not quite as great as when we look at them at first. Keep in mind that the rest of your portfolio expense ratio is less than 20 basis points. So there's a big difference in cost structure between the two. Okay. In fact, if you go down to page 18, it gives you a specific. Vanguard Extended Market is 10 basis points, and Mid-Cap Value is 9. Okay. Any questions about performance? Any concerns? Any things you'd... We good? Okay. Now, go on to the next tab, the OPEB fund. Okay. And then in the very back of the book, you'll see the one page which brings it up through the end of October. So the market value at the end of September was $30 million. At the end of October, it was $31.3 million. Okay. The third quarter loss was $1.3 million. October gain was approximately $1.3 million. So just about an offset. The one-year gain was a negative $55,000, so a loss of $55,000. Again, October 1st through September 30th. You outperformed your policy index by approximately almost 1%, which is a very nice outperformance. In a moment, we'll get to what caused that outperformance. And that was from the strong quarter performance from your active equity managers. And very low investment fees. In your OPEB fund, you're at 26 basis points. That's probably the second lowest cost structure of any of my clients. Okay, so, and that's... I have 16 our total firm has 36 clients, so you know, fee structure is very good there. And looking ahead is the investment policy statement review, which we'll get to in a moment. Okay. Why don't I jump you to page 36? And again, hopefully maybe you had some opportunity. I'm not trying to jump past anything in particular, but what makes me very happy here is you look at your, and although ranking is only one thing to look at because, you know, every plan has a different asset allocation mix. Some are more conservative, some are more aggressive. You know, some things are just point in time. But ultimately, and this was one of the other things that came out of our questionnaire, we asked, you know, what's the most important thing you get out of Pierce Park? And we were hoping they were saying, the strategic thinking and blah, blah, blah. Number one is, we want to know how we do against the other funds. So people still look at that as some marker. Now, I caution when one is way up or way down is to be mindful there's different asset allocation mixes. But we still all want to look at that. What you don't want to be is different and wrong. You know, if you're different and right, that's okay. If you're wrong, but everybody else is, that could be okay also. But you don't want to be different and wrong. So what we have seen is over the last couple years, so if you recall, going back a couple years ago, you were in the bottom quartile in your OPEB fund. Okay. Well, now for third quarter, you were in the top 19%. Okay. And that's even after you moved your equity allocation up from 60 to 65, which that in itself for the quarter would have been negative to you since equities underperformed fixed income. Year to date in the top 39%, the 1 year the top 27%, 2 years in the top 42, and 3 years in the top 50. So now at least your 3 year number, at least you're equal to above average in every one of those time frames now. And it really was the changes that you did last year that you've left in place for this year that's made that all happen. So, okay. Go on to page 40, because I do want to put one of these funds on the watch list. Okay. Now, let's go down to, well, let's start with MFS Low Vol, which you picked. That's not the one I want to put on the watch list. They did exactly as you expected. When the markets are down, they're supposed to do better than the markets. They're low volatility. In fact, that's what they did. They were down 5.5 versus their benchmark down 9.4. This is on page 40. And for the year-to-date, they're down 3.1 versus 7. And for the 1 year, and you've had them just about 1 year, they're down up 1.3 versus the benchmark down 6.7. So they actually outperformed their benchmark by 8 percentage points. Now, I would expect them to outperform in this time period. I didn't expect them to outperform by 8 basis points, so at least it puts a little wind to your back, you know, for some period of time when they, you know, they probably will underperform. Thornburg, if you look at their performance, I'd say by any measure you have to be very happy. You know, beat their benchmark this quarter 9.1 versus 9.4, year to date outperforming by 5%, 1 year outperforming by 10.9%. They're up 4.2 versus 6.7. 3 years, 17.4.7. That means they outperformed their benchmark by 10 percentage points per year over the last 3 years, ranking them in the top 2% of global equity managers. And 5 years, you know, even now you've had them for just about 2 years. So you captured, you know, not all that, but you captured some of that. Thornburg is the one I'd put on the watch list. And the reason why I would put them on the watch list is a couple fold. One is their flagship product, which is a Thornburg Value International Fund, has had extreme cash outflows. They had two portfolio managers. They went up to three, then one left, and another left, then the third one left, and so they had a complete change of their portfolio. They lost a number of analysts. Their performance was poor up until this year. It was poor in 2013, 2014, and for a firm who had, it was like $80 or $100 billion and about $40 billion in this product between separate accounts and mutual funds. They're down to $10 billion. Now, you might look and say, well, so who cares? Our product is doing great. But if you're a firm and you've got they've got $1 to $2 billion in the product you're in, they have 10 and they had $40 billion here, they're going to hire an analyst. Which team are they going to put them on? Okay. They're going to raid talent. Do they raid talent from here and bring it over here? Even if they don't raid talent, do they support this as much as they support this. If this is 10 times the revenues of the firm than this is, and was really at one point almost 40 times the revenue. So we've been watching them closely all year, although performance still was quite good, you know, and so it's like, okay, so we put them on internally what we call the heightened awareness list. Like, we're watching to see which way they turn on us. When their flagship product actually turned around, they've got new portfolio team in, they're doing well, they've got their performance has been good, and they're starting to get RFPs from institutional accounts, which typically that's a sign that you know, institutional players are saying, you know, we think you've righted the ship. On the global fund, again, through last quarter, still very good performance, but they bought two stocks, and I forget, one was, I think, Concordia, and the other was Valiant or something like that. I might have the names a little bit incorrect there, but both of them are very, very similar in approach in the pharmaceutical area. And this is a fund that will own 35 to 40 stocks. So they will have times of really strong outperformance and other times of you know, hopefully not strong underperformance, but sure, a decent amount of underperformance. I'd expect that, okay? That's why you have the MFS low vol to help, you know, cushion that. But those two products were very, very similar, almost redundant. It was almost like having 10% in one stock. And then in Valiant, there was some of the hedge fund shorters came in and went short on that stock. And so they've done very poorly in that area. And there's some questions about maybe that Valiant was cooking the books a little bit. Now, a manager would have a tough time necessarily figuring that out. A lot of times, you know, you talk to other investment managers and they said, well, we didn't see that either. We don't know for sure. But we've got them on their watch list. They are in our 401k fund that we have. And we've been meeting two or three times a week talking about what we want to do about that. We haven't pulled the trigger yet. But I surely owe it to my clients that if we pull something out of our fund, to let you know right away and why. So I'm letting you know that they are on our watch list. And then and we haven't made a move yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the year, if we don't make a move, we may at least trim them back some. Now, you, because you wanted a smaller number of funds, have a greater allocation to Thornburg than we do in our fund. We have, you know, we follow the model that we did for you. You know, we figure it's good. If it's good advice for our Consulting Plus clients, we should be doing the same thing. So we have about 13 or 14 funds, Thornburg's in it, but I think they're about 3.5% of our portfolio. So you have a greater exposure to that because of the desire that you wanted to, you know, trim, you know, have less funds in your mix. So,
Mike.
Yes.
Can I just
sure.
I just want to make sure that IT can hear us okay. The microphones. She wants to make sure that everything's okay.
I heard a little bit of whispering. I was wondering what was going on. I was like, what is that? You know, so,
just received an IM. Will someone please speak so we know that this
yeah,
is working?
I thought maybe Nancy was having a conversation with herself or something. I don't know. Yeah. Well, they, you know, they say it's okay to talk to yourself. It's if you answer when it's a problem.
Well, as a general question, I guess, the performance summaries here and in the pension fund all look at five-year returns. And, of course, we've had a tremendous five-year run. And I'm just, you know, wondering what a longer view might look like in these portfolios. I don't know that you could see a better five-year picture in the market than we've just had.
Yeah. So our expectations are that returns over the next 10 years will be below historic norms. And we believe that for two reasons. One is, if you just look at fixed income alone, fixed income, when an actuary looks at a 7.5% return assumption, they're looking at 5 to 5.25 on fixed income. They're looking at about 10 and a quarter on equities. You blend the two together, you take out your cost, and you know, you get about 7.5. Well, bonds, it's pretty predictable what can happen with bonds. If the yield on the bond is 2% and you hold it for 5 years, what are you going to get? And even at 5 years from now, if it's now matured and you reinvested a higher interest rate, it's not likely that higher interest rate is going to be 12%, so that the next 5 years after that, you get 12% and then 2% on the other. So our expectations on fixed income is about 2.5% over the next 10 years. Okay. We also think domestic equities are a bit overvalued if you look at historic price-earnings ratio, which is a normalized price-earnings ratio, which actually tends to be a very good predictor of the next 10 years of equity returns. One could look at that even in like in 1998 when price-earnings ratios were up to 40 and everybody's, this is a new paradigm and blah, 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 blah. Well, the reality is the markets are reasonably efficient in the long run. They can be terribly inefficient in the short run. And so when we look at that, the price-earnings ratio for the U.S. equity market is actually a bit higher than historic norms, even over historic norms over the last 20 years. So our expectation on U.S. equities, probably more around 6.5%. Now, international equities, you know, are actually just a bit undervalued. The negative of international equities is what I mentioned earlier, is in the down markets, they tend to get hit harder, you know. But we think they will have at least normal real rate of returns, you know, which then gets to the other issue as to what will inflation be, because it's really a real return plus inflation as to what your nominal return will be. And it actually uses a nominal return of 7.5, okay? Having said all that, you know, 7.5 is going to be a really, really almost impossible number to hit over the next 10 years under any scenario, unless somebody went to all equities, but then you go all equities and you just I'm not suggesting that. I'm just you know, this an academic discussion right now. But then you have that volatility that, boy, if the market goes down, could you imagine it? How could you justify it, everybody? Well, we went to 100% equity. So our expectations are, and I think you need to, you know, either whether it's through actuarial assumptions or just start figuring, you know, as part of your budget, that maybe you might get 6.5% returns over the next 10 years, over the next 7.5, and what might that do to the ARC? Now, right now, you have some wind at your back because you had 5 good years and you have some actuarial gains that you haven't used yet, you know, so, but those will fall off over time, you know, so. Okay. And that's, any questions about the OPEB fund? Okay, as I said in the back, there's the October. And I would think on the pension, you'd see sort of the same kind of performance, your asset allocations, almost the same. It is targeted for 65% in the OPEB and 60 in the pension, but the 60 assumes that the state is at 60%. Because that's what they state as their policy index. But the reality is a lot of times the state runs at more like 70% anyway, so 65 to 70. Okay. Next?
Thank you. Yep.
Sure.
Next is the investment policy statements.
Okay. So, and what I handed out, let's see, three stapled sections. Okay. Did these get emailed out also? Have they had a chance to look at them?
They have not.
Okay. Okay. So the one with the nice globe on the front of it, it's a nice summary. As you know, we've gone back and forth. We did some changes to our template, more, not too much substantively, but more the just the written part, cleaning up some components to it, bring a couple components of it up to date. You've talked about potentially maybe making a change. You made a change on your OPEB fund, having changed from 60% to 65%. We talked about maybe increase in international a little bit in each of the plans. And you asked that we try to bring the two, because one was written back in 2007. One was written in 2000. The OPEB was written in 2010. There's been addendums added to them along the way, and so this is really a cleaning up process primarily. So, if you go to page 3, and as I mentioned, your existing investment policy statement was written almost 5 years ago. 3 amendments along the time. You know, the new IPS updates the investment guidelines and restrictions. We believe it makes it easier to read and follow. And improves the consistency with the pension guidelines. We also had another issue that, and we talked to Dom DeRamo, who is the fixed income manager for Wilmington Trust, and we had a couple emails and then a couple calls with him last week, just to make sure that he was comfortable with any changes that we had, because there were change. Not only do you have different investment policy statements, not hugely different, but a little bit different, and different benchmarks on those. You know, he was managing to different benchmarks on those. But then your contracts with them were slightly different because they were written at different times. And so we wanted to bring this all into uniformity, because there is no, in our opinion, there's no compelling reason to manage one differently than the other. Okay. So, page four, you know, right now the existing guideline, IPS, states that the targeted return is an annualized 8%. And the reason why it said that is because that was your actuarial assumed rate of return. Okay. What we'd like to put in there is not 7.5, but state that the target return is the plan's actuarially assumed rate of return, so that if in the future, if you change your assumed rate of return, you don't have to change your investment policy statement. Okay. Okay. In the investment guidelines, there's also a part that mentions that if any one manager, and this would have to be a balanced fund manager, if they, let's say they were target 65-35, if they move more than 10% from one asset class to another asset class, they had to let the board know. Well, you don't have any manager that is managing as a balanced fund manager. It sort of was maybe the way things were done long ago. I think the likelihood that you'd have a balanced fund manager is probably very unlikely. And it creates more confusion, I think, than anything else when managers look and say, well, what does that mean? Well, if I have some cash and I do this. So we would just like to remove that altogether. Okay. And then there's the investment manager should exceed their assigned benchmarks post fees or net of fees on an annualized basis over periods of 3 or more years. We just like to push that out to 5. Now, the reason why is because it gives a little bit more of a market cycle. You know, sometimes we've written these a full market cycle, but then you get into the definition. So what does a full market cycle really mean? And is it bottom to top to bottom, or is it top to bottom to top? I just think if a manager doesn't outperform their benchmark over 5 years net of fees, it's probably a pretty good trigger that you want to at least take a good hard look at them. Now, let me just throw an academic component in here. Let's say you have a very defensive equity manager who, it's a time where aggressive stocks are doing very well. I wouldn't terminate that manager after 5 years just because they underperformed their benchmark. You'd actually expect that too. But at least you put a marker down that, you know, saying they should do that, and then that gives you a framework to look, you know, is there a compelling reason not to do something? So it's a change from 3 to 5, okay. Under equity guidelines, you know, it limits an investment manager to 5% position in any one security. We've run into this a couple times. If you have all mutual funds, it's really not going to make a difference. So with the OPEB fund, it's not likely for a while. This provision would affect DuPont, okay, because they manage a separate account on your pension side, but wanting to have consistency. There are times, like if you have a large cap growth manager, Apple was, you know, 7% of the large cap growth index, or maybe even greater than that. If they were constrained to be only 5%, okay, then you don't allow them really to manage the money the way they want to. I wouldn't really want somebody to go up to 10 or 12%. We change the cap to be 5% or 1.5 times the weighting, really the greater of the two. So, there's put a limit on convertibles and ADRs in there. We had international/global equity guidelines, removed those guidelines, and have built them right into the equity guidelines. Okay, so we've just wanted to have that. Now, it spells out the guidelines of that, but it's within the overall equities instead of having a separate international equity, separate domestic equity ones. There was, you know, no less than 50% of the total fixed income shall be invested in U.S. government securities. Okay, we removed that. I think that should be a discussion point. Any of these can be discussion points, but that should be one. Okay. Average credit quality, it's at A2 for Moody's, but we just made it A/A2 because that represents S&P's and Moody's ratings. And some managers really, and some evaluation services do it on S&P, some do it on Moody's, so it just it's really saying the same thing, but saying we can look to either S&P or Moody's for credit quality. Investment grade bonds rated BAA or triple B, that is investment grade, but it's the lowest investment grade. So right now, your policy does not allow you to have any in that area. But the benchmark, the intermediate government credit benchmark, has about 15% in that area. Maybe it's 15 or 20%. We think it should be permissible for a manager to have some bonds in that space, but we wanted to put a cap on that. But they also have to meet that average credit quality constraint. Okay. Federal agencies were limited to 50%. We removed in there. If you want to put it back in, you can put, no problem with that back in. And the zero coupon treasuries, because they are treasuries, we eliminated that also. Okay. Cash investment guidelines, we removed those. They're now included within the fixed income. Instead of having a separate area for cash, it's just rolled into fixed income. And then the review procedures being, that they must beat the median over 5 years instead of 3 years. Okay. Yes?
You have single issuer limited to 25%. That doesn't include U.S. government, I assume.
Well,
it's corporate, I guess.
Yes, that would be corporate, yes. Yeah. That should actually be under agencies. So that wasn't clear as I think about that. That should be single agent for agency bonds, a single issuer limit of 25%. Should I go into the pension? Or do you want to have some discussion about this? Or would you like? It's a pleasure of the board.
Anybody have any questions? Or this?
Nope. Okay. So onto the pension. The existing investment policy statement was signed in June 2014, which was actually a new one from the one from 2007. As you saw from what we gave you last time, we reviewed and redlined the existing IPS to make it consistent with the new OPEB IPS. And then we recommended approving the IPS addendum. Review of changes to follow, which is what you see in the next page, which is page 8. Okay. The very first point is the same thing as we had on the pension side, whereas this notice, where they need to make notice if there's a 10% shift in the market value from one asset class to another, you don't use any balanced fund managers. I'll say other than the state, and the state's not going to come and tell you when they've made a change in your asset allocation. That you're, quite frankly, you're a small piece of an $8 billion fund, so you can leave that in there, but I can tell you what happens with the managers themselves. It gets a confusing issue to them. It's, what exactly is that supposed to mean to us? And I just don't see it relevant to yourselves. Equity guidelines, same thing. You had a 5% limit on REITs, okay, because the state does what they do, makes it difficult to put that limitation there. The limits on investment managers to a 5% position in any one security. That's the same issue I mentioned on the OPEB fund. And although I don't think it's likely to affect DuPont because they have a pretty wide number of holdings, that's where this could come into play is, okay. Fixed income guidelines, same thing as before. The existing IPS allows non-investment grade bonds. That's the one we gave you back in 2014. This is not counting what the state does. This is just for the other assets. Wilmington Trust is not going to invest in non-investment grade bonds. I think your personalities are not to invest there. Generally, mine is not either, although some, I will say, I have a couple clients who like to have a manager a little bit of latitude to go in that space. But I thought maybe it might just be good to make it clear. You can't buy junk bonds. So And then investment grade bonds, the same issue as on the pension, on the OPEB side. The BAA, again, that is still investment grade. Okay, it's the lowest grade of investment grade, are limited to 35% of the portfolio. Now, that doesn't have to be a hard and fast number if you're more comfortable with 25 or 30. You know, but I'd say I probably wouldn't take it below 30 because the benchmark itself, although down, I think it's around 15 or 17 now, has been as high as about 25% in BAA. So, and then some other fixed income things. Most of these are the same as the OPEB, except for the first one. It allows the duration to be no more and no less than 25% of the benchmark. Okay, and what does that mean? The duration of the intermediate government credit benchmark is about 4 years. Okay, right now that means they have to, can be no less than 3 and no more than 5, 25% of that 4%. This would allow them to go no more than 5, because you don't want them to take greater interest rate bets. The further out in the duration they're taking, if interest rates went up and they had a long bond portfolio, the more adversely affected it would be. But it would allow them that if they really think interest rates are going to go up, they can go even shorter. They can't go all the way down to cash. You don't want a bond manager going all the way down to cash, because if they're wrong, then you've missed some interest return. But it allows them a little bit more flexibility. They could go down to as short as 2-year duration. I don't know that Wilmington Trust would ever do this, but we also had to write this, you know, maybe Wilmington Trust isn't your bond manager someday. You know, I'm not suggesting that. I think they've done a nice job for you, but this has to be written neutral to that idea. So that's why you see that change of that 50% less, 25% more. It's not symmetric, but by design it's not symmetric. Then at the bottom, under international equity benchmark, you have MSCI EAFE. We believe it should be changed to the ACWI XUS. The EAFE index does not include emerging markets. ACWI does include emerging markets. And we think that's the appropriate benchmark in today's world for evaluating a manager. This is on page 9. And then the fixed income benchmark, and this is where you have a disparity between the two plans. On the OPEB fund, it's the intermediate government credit. The pension, it's the intermediate government. We talked to Dom and said, you know, we believe because you now can go up to 50% non-U.S. securities, non-agency and treasuries, and since that benchmark is set roughly 70% treasuries and agencies, that's a better benchmark as the government credit, and he's okay with that. So it's a little higher hurdle they have to jump over, but we think that's appropriate. But that would also make it consistent with your OPEB fund. So we tried to make it simple.
cash, guidelines for cash. No added guidelines for cash in the pension, but remove them in the OPEB.
Well, we moved them over to under the fixed income side. And I
that wouldn't be appropriate in the pension?
I think we might not have listed that as, but we would have done the same thing on that. Yes. So I think we might not have. We tried to capture all the different changes. That would have been one of the, that would be a change also for the pension. It might not have been enumerated in this summary, but absolutely.
I say yes. Okay. Thank you.
Yes. But good question.
I'm assuming same thing with you have REITs on one that was removed and it wasn't listed on the other, or the ADR limit on one and not on the other.
It was already there. Yeah.
Same thing with the duration as well.
Yes. Yeah, it's actually already in there in the OPEB one, so that's why we. And what we try to do was reflect, is, you know, there's been some discussion. Originally, you had, I'll say, on a scale of 1 to 10, my clients on a fixed income, 10 being aggressive and 1 being conservative, mine were always at about a 2.5 or 3. And you guys were probably at about a 1 to 1.5. So, and that has served you well, but there's also some desire to try to capture, maybe give the manager some latitude to maybe make a little bit more return. That's at least what I felt I've heard over the last couple of meetings. So we tried to give them a little bit more flexibility in what they did. But still, it still makes you probably about a 2 to 2.5 in the spectrum out there on a scale of 1 to 10 in aggressiveness on in fixed income. And they'll still manage it, I'll say, like a lot. They monitor every security, but they're not actively trading them. They're really trying to hold them to maturity, as you had suggested years ago, which I thought was so simple. And then I thought, you know, actually, this is a great idea. So I have more and more of my clients doing that. So.
Is there a duration around 2 now?
No, your duration now is around, I think it's about 3.5-ish. Okay. Yeah. In fact, probably. Now, on your pension, it's going to be a little bit longer because the state manages to the aggregate bond index. So it's really just on the non-state assets. Your duration is actually on the OPEB fund. The benchmark is 4, and you're at 3.6. And the benchmark, just, you know, for U.S. Treasuries and agencies is 70%, and you're 85%. So, I mean, it's a very conservatively managed portfolio. Even though they have the latitude to go as low down to 50, they actually have a higher allocation to that space than the benchmark.
Mr. Sean, I just want to thank you. I thanked you before.
Sure.
When you gave this to me, that your group did a great job. Yeah. With the comparison and the new, it cleaned it up, and I just want to thank you for
sure.
The work you did to put this together.
Sure.
Does anybody have any other questions or concerns about these changes? If not, I'd like to have a motion to take this recommendation to council to change the both IPSs for the OPEB and the pension.
So moved.
Okay. I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second.
Wait a minute. I think there's one discussion you need to have, though. Part of what you were contemplating was changing the international equity targets. So if you take it to them, you'd have to define, we can fill that in as to what the international equity targets are. Right now, I'll say effectively on the pension, it's 12%. You don't have a specific target there. You just say 60% to the state.
Right.
60% times 20 is 12%. So do you want to change that target? You know, from on international. That's part of why you had us do a search. And then the OPEB, you're at 14, and we had suggested that maybe you consider going to 16 or 18 on international. So I think you'd want to incorporate that in your motion as to whether you want to make a change on the international targets.
Well, we want to talk about the international part
okay. Next.
Okay. So we could do that. We could pull back the motions and then go back into the international if we want to add back. That's fine. We could do it that way. That's fine. Can you guys withdraw your motion? Mr. Baker, Mr. Leahy, second?
Yes.
Withdraw the motion. Okay, go ahead. Go on to the international part.
Okay. So international, you know, you'd asked us to do a search and see, you know, what options there might be, and the options you might contemplate for one plan might be different than the other one. So if you go to page 1, as you mentioned, the board expressed an interest in increasing the allocation to international for both the plans. As I mentioned before, you have 12% exposure in the pension fund. The OPEB is 14%, and that is accessed both through one international manager and two global managers. And just so you know, we treat the global managers, when we try to get to this 14%, we treat the global managers as 50-50 between U.S. and non-U.S., because that their benchmark is about 50-50 U.S. and non-U.S. And then when you roll that all up, that gets you to your 14%. Okay. So some of the options. Given the potential size, we're actually going to recommend the use of international passive for the pension, because it's such a small allocation that it would just do it passively through a Vanguard fund. Then the OPEB is to allocate that through your existing managers. Okay. So And then one other option that we wanted to put in there, which was Artisan, because Artisan is, we'd be reluctant to want to put any more money in Thornburg right now under the circumstances, mm-hmm. you know. Artisan is not the same as Thornburg, but they're sort of ish in the same ballpark. In fact, Artisan has hired a couple analysts away from Thornburg under the circumstances. Artisan's a little bit more growthy than Thornburg is. So Artisan, they have five portfolio managers, supported by a research team. Yeah, you don't need me to read all this for us. It's a global fund. They lean to the growth side. You'll see in a moment their performance has been very good. MFS, which is the low vol manager that you have, and then Vanguard Total World Stock Index Fund. Okay. And then the one below that you see is actually that Vanguard also has an all-world ex-US index fund. So the world fund is if you go global, okay, and the world ex-US would be straight international. Sorry to make it overly confusing, but it depends how you slice and dice this, so we want to give you both a look at. On page 3, see information. Now, did this, Gina, was this forwarded out ahead of time for people? Okay. See information on Artisan, you know, assets, just about $100 billion in assets. This particular strategy has been around since 2007. I presume you're reasonably familiar with Artisan. And their cost is about the same as Thornburg's. Thornburg's is 99 basis points. Artisan's 97 basis points. MS is low vol is 95. The Vanguard Total World Stock, world again mean US and non-US, is 27 basis points. And then the last one on the far right, which is international only, is 14 basis points in cost. Okay. Page 4, see a write-up information on each of the manage, you know, a little bit more detail on Artisan. They manage, you know, they do have some maximum allocations to single countries other than the US. They don't have that on the U.S. because the U.S. is 50%. So, but on the other non-U.S. countries, the max of 35%, 25% industry, and market capitalization at $3 billion or above, that means they're not buying small-cap stocks. It's mid- and large-cap stocks. Okay. MFS low vol, you're already somewhat familiar with that because you have that in the OPEB fund. It is designed to protect you a lot in the down markets, will give up. Doesn't mean it'll be negative in the up markets, but if the up markets are up 20%, don't expect them to be up 20%. They are by design are in more conservative, more defensive type stocks. Okay. They do it both through security selection and then they do a quantitative approach to structure the portfolio to minimize the volatility of the overall fund. On page 6, we want to give you some idea of the allocations. Okay. Now these are of the global funds. As you might expect, you know, roughly 50%, and in the case of Artisan, a little bit more than 50% is in the US. They all have about the same representation in emerging markets. They're actually all a little bit less than emerging markets, and MFS, you would especially expect that. The emerging market stocks tend to be more volatile, so you would expect a lower allocation to them. Doesn't mean they have the absence of that. It's just they have you know, more of that. The other is cash, just so you know. So everybody asks, well, what's other? Cash. And then you can see their sector distribution. And Artisan, which has the smallest number of holdings, you would expect some concentrations. And one concentration they have is in the info technology area, obviously. Much lower allocations for them, like in materials and energy. As you might expect, they are a growth manager. You know, they're buying growth stocks, so you're not going to get much in energy or materials there. Market capitalization. You can see how the distribution is across the spectrum. Very little in the small and the Artisan, as we mentioned. In the large, they're all roughly equally represented. But there's not a big disparity. You know, when you look at the weight down at the bottom, the weighted average market, you know, 87 billion, 62, 87. That's all large, on average, large cap companies. You know, it doesn't mean they're all in large cap companies, but they're on the large end of things. And then purposely put last is the returns, because if people look at returns first, they don't pay much attention to everything else. This is year by year returns. For this year, Artisan has had the best. We would actually expect that, even though it's been a down market, and you might say why. And the reason why this year is because growth stocks have significantly outperformed value. So we would expect, and I mean a huge disparity in difference. So they better have outperformed this year, even in a down market. MFS in 2014 was the winner. You know, 2012 it was Artisan. MFS's product, you should know, only goes back to, it was about November of 2011, so there's only, you know, 3.5 years of performance, almost four. And Vanguard Total World typically should fall between the two. In most cases, although it wasn't true this year, Artisan will outperform in the up markets, underperform in the down markets. MFS would do the opposite, and the index fund should fall smack dab in the middle. And then we show you longer term returns. I do point out 3 years and 5 years, and all of a sudden you're gonna look at 5 years, they went, MFS, you show a 5-year return, yet you don't show 5 years of annual returns. How do you get to that? What we did, in order just to give you some picture of what 5-year would look like, is in the time periods where they didn't have that product, there's a low vol index. So we just use the index as a proxy for them, just to give you some feel, properly footnoted though, as you'll see at the bottom, as to longer term what they've done. Both of them, you know, have outperformed the index rather considerably. So whereas a lot of times you might want to go to an index fund, especially we believe in large cap domestic equities, in the global equity space, going active, at least so far, and this goes back for, you know, for the length of time that you've seen global equity strategies, and these in particular, have more than covered their fees, significantly more than covered their fees. So we do think it's one space where active management can be worthwhile, even though the cost differential is quite a bit.
I do that with my own individually managed portfolios. I use active management because I believe you can capture, there's much more of an inefficient market in global, you can capture, a good manager can capture more return.
Yeah.
So I agree with you.
Good. Okay. And then the last thing I'll point out is page 11. You know, this, and I like showing this a lot, the up-down capture ratio. The gold, the silver is MFS.
Oh, I teed you up.
Pardon me?
I teed you up perfectly.
Yeah. So they, and you can see in up markets, they do about 70% of the market. So if the market's up 10 on average, they've only been up 7. Okay. But in down markets, they're at 55. That means when the markets have been down 10, they've only been down 5.5. Okay. So you'll have huge, it's known as tracking error. There'll be times when they're going to look a lot worse than everybody else when the markets are really strong. That's okay. If you buy them for that and you remember that. Artisan actually has captured, you know, about 115% in the up market and about 90% in the down market. That's sort of the perfect place to be in the upper left-hand quadrant. Will they always be there? I don't know. For the last, you know, those past 8 years, they have been. You know, I think it really comes down to the question of do you want, you know, if you're going to increase your allocation to international, do you go and try to get a little bit more return with Artisan? Over time, they should give you better, you know, higher returns. Or do you look and say, well, we're not changing our equity allocation, you know, because you're going to stay at 65% equities, but we're getting a little bit more aggressive by adding international. We'd rather have the more defensive manager. There's not a right or wrong answer. I just sort of laying out what I think of the trade-offs there. And then the rest of it is because my analysts like just think there just aren't enough numbers already, so you need to have more numbers. page 16, just so you know, as we put together what a portfolio structure might look like, where you would draw the money from if you were, this is on a percentage basis, let's see, where you would, the red is who you would draw money from, and then the green, which doesn't stick out too well, but the green is where you would add money to. And that's just assuming you don't add a new manager, which you could, that you could add to Artisan. Or you could trim back Thornburg. So I would suggest, I think one of the first questions you want to decide is, do you want to move your international target? And if so, how much? It's currently at 14 on the OPEB fund. We'll come back to the pension in a moment. Do you want to move that from 14, say at 14, move it to 16, or move it to 18? And then I would suggest you have the discussion, okay, if you do change it, where does it go to?
How concerning were the events on Friday in Europe to international performance going forward?
Well, short term, a lot. Most of the time, I mean, these things do, you know, I'll say, these events occur, you know, even I'll go all the way back to 63, the market, and when Kennedy was shot, the markets collapsed for a day and then bounced right back up. Having said that, you know, is there a tightening up of, you know, which could be positive, it could be negative, just on free trade? You know, people start closing their borders a little bit more. Does Europe start closing their borders a little bit more? Not just to outsiders, but to internally, you know, between Belgium and France would be, you know, the easy one to pick on right now. Having said that, I don't know. How's that? It's one of the reasons why I sort of like...
That's why I asked the question, because I don't know either.
Yeah. Quite frank, it's a little bit why I like global equities, because then the manager has the flexibility of saying, okay, maybe right now I want to be a little bit more in the U.S., you know, I'll put a little bit more there, you know, or... You know, maybe I want a little bit more in defense stocks because maybe there might be a ramping up of, you know, defense spending. But at some point in time, then that will be played, and having a global equity manager, then they might say, okay, now we've pulled back a little bit more defensive and a little bit more in the U.S. Now maybe the play is more internationally. It goes back to fundamentals. One of the reasons we like global. It's a little different question, though, is do you increase your international targets, you know, and I just...
But is it the right time to do that right now? I mean, I just worry I'm concerned about the funds, obviously, but I'm also concerned about the appearance in a conservative organization like this of maybe this is not the right time to do it based on everything that's been going on. How's it look to take that to council right now?
It's very, very good.
Is that fair?
That's very fair.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very fair.
And although the markets might move in January or February, it's so easily put this on hold. You know, that might be a very, very good point of like, let's, timing is everything, as they say.
Personally, I agree with your point. I'd like to wait it out this quarter.
Yeah. Doesn't hurt. I don't think it hurts you at all to wait it out. You know. And actually, quite frankly, I think it gives you more time to look through this and say, okay, if you do this, what direction do you want to go in? Give us a little bit more time to see what happens with Thornburg also.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So perhaps is it a motion to table the international discussion until next quarter?
Yes, that's good.
Okay.
So
you could have voted on the IPS after all.
It's okay. Well, let's take a motion to table the discussion about increasing international. And I have a second. We'll take to vote. Mr. James?
Yes.
Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Thank you. Now, I would like to have a motion that the Pension Committee recommend the changes to the Pension Investment Policy Statement to Council as recommended and presented by Pierce Park Group. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
I have a motion for Mr. Baker. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. James, so we'll take a vote. Mr. James?
Yes.
Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
And I vote yes. Thank you. Good. Thank you, Mr. Schoen.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. Everything. That was a lot.
That was a lot. Great job.
The next item.
And I didn't take up as much, I didn't take up any more time than I normally do.
We have committee member replacement on the agenda. As I was looking at Mr. James and his retirement, I also noticed that other seats are up in January as well. So just want everyone to be aware of that we'll have to take that to council. So Mr. Leahy, your seat is up January 17, 2016, which is before the next meeting. And Mr. Baker, yours is the same thing as well. So if you could tell me between now and then if you'd like to continue for another 4 years. You don't have to do it right now.
Pay the same?
Same.
We'll double it.
And any recommendations, because I will have to take that to council for their approval. As far as the employee, we need a representative for the employee spot, which is Mr. James' spot. Any recommendations for that as well? Usually we'll take our recommendations to council and then they vote on that recommendation. So go ahead.
I'd like to thank Mr. James for his service on the committee, because I think he's been on the committee since day one when the committee began. And I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out too. It's been a while.
Really added a lot to it. And very knowledgeable about investments, and it's helped because we've had a pretty good run.
Yeah. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure serving on the committee. And especially with all of you, it's with your knowledge, and it's very interesting, I think, to be on the committee, and I think we've been successful, and it's just been a pleasure, and thank you very much. Good working with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next item is the 2016 meeting dates. They're listed there. If you have any questions or concerns about them, you can let me know after the meeting as well, and then we'll send out a calendar invite to everybody on those dates. Pending that some of you stay on the committee. And for additional business, I had placed at your spots the actuary reports. We just received them this month. I don't have them on the agenda to discuss, but I want you to be aware on, if you look at the one that says actuary report for the OPEB benefits, page 12 will show you the funding ratio. They did implement the new mortality tables, so our funding percentage has gone down. And page 22 starts where the assumptions are listed, that we will be hiring an actuary to look at those assumptions this year in 2016. So I plan on issuing an RFP. In that RFP, we're going to review all the assumptions that are listed in these pamphlets, find out the sustainability of our pension with our current allocation, and also review changes to the plans. Some of the departments are asking us to look at that, so we'll be looking at that as well. The other one that's blue, page 2 shows you the funded ratio, and page 18 is the start of the assumptions. So we'll be discussing this more at the next quarterly meeting, but I wanted you to have it ahead of time. I just got it this month.
In terms of public disclosures, public reporting of pensions,
yes.
Can you remind me how and when those disclosures will occur?
So for the blue one, the pension, that will be shown on the financial statements as of June 30th, and all that detail is in here as well. So the funding mechanism has not changed. So we're still doing it the same way, but the reporting side shows that long-term liability on the face of the financial statements, which will be reported. Those statements don't get released till January, but they're as of June 30th. The OPEB side, you're not going to see any changes on that side for probably at least, they said 2017 is when they're expecting that to happen.
Well, is there a line, a line item then on the county's balance sheet that is pension, unfunded pension liability?
Yes.
And that will be a new line item?
That'll be a new line item in the government-wide financial statements. Governments have to produce two types of financial statements. And the full accrual financial statement, yes, we will have that full liability on the face of the financial statements.
And I'm wondering whether, leading to this next dumb question, and that is, I'm wondering whether there's a context that could be included, either formally in the financial statements or elsewhere, a context that would say, that would characterize how we feel about that number. Is that a good number relative to other government entities like us, or are we doing better than most? Where are we in the universe of government entities?
Last meeting I provided where we compared, and we are doing very well compared to other municipalities by far, so I'm very happy about that. Lucky for me, I get to write a nice little thing before the financial statements, a letter, so I will be addressing that so that if anybody gets into the financial statements, they can see how we do relate to everybody else as a government.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So the OPEB liability will not show on the accrual?
That's correct.
Not yet.
2017 is the projection right now.
Yeah, it has to be 73, 74.
Four. You got it.
Yeah, that follow just like the pension. The first year will show up on the OPEB statements, and the next year, 2017 is what I
thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll put it. Right. It'll be put in the footnotes first, and then it'll be on the face of the statement. Which, you know, it's probably really a good thing for us because, you know, when you compare us to the rest of the governments, we actually show how well we are doing. So.
You really are light years, truly light years ahead, especially on the OPEB side. Light years ahead in your funding ratio.
Any other questions?
Are percentages funded about the same as what they've been?
They went down about 5% because of the mortality tables. People are living longer, so they changed that, which caused our percentage to go down, but not because of the way we're funding. It's the assumption.
The actuarial engagement, will it include recommendations as to specific elements that are look to be need to be revisited because standards have changed or our experience has actually changed?
Right, absolutely, yes. That is part of the whole analysis.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, if not, I'll take a motion to adjourn. I would make a motion in a second.
Second.
Mr. James?
Yes.
Ms. Burrington?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Leahy?
Yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Awesome.